Welcome to episode 71 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. This past week, I received a call from Hugh Graham, who many of you will know is a photographer and journalist, and my one-time university lecturer and colleague. The point of Hugh's call was to let me know that he was about to receive a copy of On1 Software's Perfect Resize 7 Pro Edition, and to ask me whether I'd like to use this as the basis of one of our chats. Well, of course, what can you say? Perfect Resize 7 is the latest version of what a lot of you will know as Genuine Fractals, a great program first and foremost designed for upscaling photographs. Typical usage includes preparing images for large format gallery prints and marketing and PR displays. Now, rather than this being one of our usual topic-based discussions, on this occasion we decided to talk specifically about the product specification, its real-world applications, and of course our first impressions having used a previous version for many years. So, with that in mind, welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 71. So once again, I am sat with Hugh Graham, my one-time lecturer and colleague, and we're taking a slightly different stance today in that we're talking, or certainly starting off, with a product as the centre of our conversation. I received a call from Hugh recently to say that he was getting hold of a piece of software. Oh, it's computers in the background. He was getting a piece of software called Perfect Resize 7, which, for those of you who are aware of, what was the original name for the software?
Genuine Fractals.
Genuine Fractals. It's the latest version, and long story short, it basically allows you to make large or upscale pictures to fit whatever size. So if you needed a sort of a 7 foot by 4 foot picture, you could take your standard file and, without having any loss of quality, upscale your pictures. And we've only had a quick look to begin with. We can both sort of, you know, go away and have a look at it. But first of all, Hugh, your first thoughts about this software compared to the old version that we've both used quite a lot?
Well, I suppose the first thing that you could say about this software is it works far more quickly than the earlier version.
Mm.
In fact, when we uprated a picture to 24 inches wide,
yeah,
it took less than a minute. When we doubled that size again, it still only took 2 minutes. So we had one picture that was 4 foot by 7 foot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it still only took to, from an ordinary image that we would have printed at 6 by 9, it went up to that 4 foot by 7 foot. And it was in, literally less than 2 minutes.
Yeah. And I mean, it is worth almost having a caveat here to say that, you know, we are fully aware that different machines are going to be working at different speeds. It's fair to say that your hardware here is not the latest and it's not super speed of sound, super quick.
No, it's not.
But in terms of real-time processing, that was very impressive.
I work on a Mac because and my desk place is quite somewhat limited, so the Mac I have is a mini Mac. It's got 8 gigabytes of RAM. So it's quite powerful, and it does what I want it to do.
Mm.
But yes, there are Macs who are far bigger and far faster than the one I use.
Mm.
So I guess that the speed at which the image was upsized was extraordinary.
Mm. And I think my most extreme example, I suppose I could say, of using the previous version that I have, was I needed a picture to go full scale on the side of a van. So it ended up being 5 by 7 foot or something. And back then, at the time, that was taking minutes to do it on pretty standard hardware.
Yeah, but you were using Genuine Fractals 3.5 at that point, weren't you?
Yeah. But the other thing that
we can go into details more specifically, but one of the things we both noticed about this version is, well, two things. One, they've now designed it so that it can work as a standalone application on your computer, whereas before you had to you had to install it into the Photoshop, Adobe Photoshop folder
as a plugin,
then save that the image you're working on, save it as an STN file, then reopen that file, which would open up the window for the Genuine Fractals, then do your things, and so it went on. This, literally, you say again, save it with that file name, and it's just a very small, when you're running it, and we've run it through Photoshop today, just very quickly, comes up with a very small box, which is very simple. Literally, within about 3 or 4 clicks, and 2 minutes later, you've got the result you want. But also, you can go into use it as a standalone application, and there are some really good new features. And as with all the tests and reviews that I do, I'm not going to list all the features because they're all out there online. Needless to say, I'll be linking in the show notes to the product and to the website. But for example, there are two versions that are available with Perfect Resize 7. One is professional and one is standard. And the standard version, I think, is around about £60.
Yeah.
And then the professional version is about £120.
Yeah.
So it's £100.
Give or take £10 either way. Yeah.
So it's about £100 or $200 if that's how you're looking at this. And there are only 4 features that are not in the standard version, which you find in the professional. One is that in the professional version, Perfect Resize supports
CMYK.
CMYK. So for people that are working in the print industry and working in that format,
then the professional edition is important.
You know, that's going to be key. Yeah. The other thing is there's what's known as a gallery wrap. So for those of you that love making canvas prints and you have the picture wrapping around the side of the canvas,
wrapping around the side of the stretcher.
Sorry, around the side of the. Yes, around the side of the frame.
Get it right, Joe. Get it right.
Such an amateur. It's terrible. Sorry, no one's listening. It'll be fine. But yeah, so it allows you that runoff or that bleed area to make sure you scale it properly. That is a feature which isn't in the standard version.
Yeah, but how many people want to do canvas prints anyway?
Well, see, this is the thing, and you have to ask again, what is your own requirements? What are your requirements? What are you going to be using it for? But I think the two key features that are in the professional version which are not in the standard version are the fact that in the professional version it integrates both with Lightroom and with Aperture. And given that a great majority of photographers and keen enthusiasts or semi-pros and just core enthusiasts are working with most likely Lightroom, but a great deal of them also Aperture, especially if they're using Mac, then that's going to be probably a sticking point or a selling point for them.
Yes, I think that's true. And also, I think that how many people do you know using Aperture? How many people do you know actually working on Macs that are using Aperture?
A select handful. You know.
Do you actually know any? I don't.
I know of them, but
name one.
Well, you wouldn't know who they were.
I'm saying you can't do it, can you?
No, I can. I just don't want to. No, seriously. No, seriously. I mean, I...
Are you listening to people? He's not... He's telling stories. He doesn't know anybody.
I know nobody. It's all for show. But, I mean, I... If I was on Mac and I'm still currently on PC, let's say nothing more. I'm getting these looks here.
We know you're plodding along on Windows 7.
Plodding along. I would use or seriously think about using Aperture, because when I have seen it in action and spoken to those very same people who I know to be using it, I have been very impressed. But again, it's horses for courses, whatever suits your workflow. The reason I don't currently use Lightroom is that I found Camera Raw, Bridge and Photoshop to be better suited to my workflow. So,
Now that I've just lent you the version of Lightroom 3, I'm sure you'll be converted instantly.
Yes.
But seriously, I've tried Aperture and I've tried Photoshop.
Mm.
I suppose I know Photoshop so well, I couldn't be bothered with Aperture. It's like all Mac products. It's brilliant, but I've got too much time and knowledge invested in Photoshop to change it.
I think if you were shooting tethered,
yeah,
to a laptop, Aperture is very good for that on location. But then a lot of people use on one software and what's the other one? There are various bits of software that are designed almost specifically for photographers that are actually working on location with a laptop set up. Now, just bringing this back to the point of Perfect Resize 7, why would people, apart from the obvious reason, why would photographers buy this software to use it when a lot of people, and this is something that we've mulled over this morning as we've sat here, a lot of people would say, look, if you're trying to get bigger file sizes, why don't you just go and get a higher megapixel camera?
Well, that's a ludicrous statement, because when you think about it, because I mean, how much is a megapixel sensor going to cost you?
Well, this is the thing. A lot of people naturally assume
it's going to be a lot more than 64 quid.
Yeah. You're going to be spending $3,000, $4,000.
Possibly. How much is a D700? For those of us who are plodding along with Nikon.
I'm not plodding along at all. D700, I think it's around about... Is it around about 1,000 now? I'm a little bit rusty on the prices. But then that's a slightly older model now because you've got the D800.
Yeah, fine, so let's
the D800 is, stupidly, it's like 26 megapixels or something.
Yeah.
I'm going to get emails now, people saying, oh, you're wrong again, it's not true. It is a high megapixel camera. But, again, you know, think about it. You've got to have the memory cards that support those large file sizes. Yeah. You've got to have the hardware in place with your computers that will run that size, those sort of files. That for a lot of people, if they were needing to supply higher size files, then using something like Perfect Resize 7 is going to be ideal because it is only £60 or £120 or $100, $200. And you've got those file sizes. So in a sort of a money-saving sort of exercise, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And what are you doing? Hugh has just sat here looking at his computer, clear that I've got his full undivided attention. What are you doing, Hugh? Faffing around.
No.
I think that's closer to the point. What are you doing? You're looking at where? Right, Warehouse Express. You've missed an E out there. Warehouse Express, two E's, is a very good online retailer, and it's one of the places that a lot of us photographers look at first of all. I'll put a link in the show notes. When we're looking at cameras, accessories, memory cards, all the usual things. Are you trying to look up the cost of a D700?
Yeah.
Okay. Silence as we await the verdict. See, if you're on PC, you wouldn't have had that problem.
It would help if I actually...
typed it in right.
Yeah.
Okay, so there you go. D800, camera body only, £2,599.
Right, okay. So if we actually go to the Canon EOS 5D Mark II, which is 1,600 quid.
Yeah.
And let's see if they've got the 5D Mark III up. No, they haven't.
No.
But that's reportedly about £3,000.
Yeah. So let's keep on track here. The thought of spending £2,500 just for the sake of getting larger file sizes to supply to... You know, some people are thinking, right, need to earn some more money. I'll supply pictures to a certain agency or to start selling big canvases or whatever. If they were stuck with a lower megapixel count on their cameras, and we're talking more like 4 megapixels or something that's, you know, like that, then this is a viable option. And it, from what I can tell, without having had a proper full-on look of the software... It is a far more advanced bit of software than we have been used to in the past.
Well, it seems to have been doing all sorts of exciting things which the earlier versions didn't do. However, just before we go trotting off down that particular path, Your commercial clients and my commercial clients. It's a question that I've asked you before, so but it's still worth asking again. How often have you had to make a print bigger than A3?
Oh, very rarely.
And you better explain what A3 is. 16 by 12, near enough?
Near enough, 16 by 12 inches, yeah.
Okay, so, and you can do A3 plus, which is what effectively 19 by 12. All right. So, if you're not going to do that, and you can make a print that size perfectly happily from a 10 megapixel sensor, can't you?
Or less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, what do you think is the real value of perfect resize then? Obviously, you can take a section of an image.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a wonderful picture, but it's too small in the frame,
mm-hmm.
and you want to get the maximum detail, you can. We haven't tested it yet, but the software claims it can go up 1,000%, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've got the like spec sheet, as it were, or like the key features here, and it says resize images up to 1,000%.
Yeah.
So if you've got, I don't know what the pictures come out of your camera at, 6x9, or you had them sized up at 6x9 on your computer earlier. So yeah, 1,000 times that, that's going to be big enough for anyone, isn't it?
Put it on the side of an aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
I think. So the people who are buying these very large sensors are going to do what, do you think? What are they going to do? What are they using them for?
Well, these large sensors, they're not...
Is it this illusion of additional quality?
I think a lot of it is. The kind of more is better sort of approach, which we know is not always the case.
Okay. Would you contemplate buying a huge sensor, like a Leica or a Hasselblad?
I don't have... I think that there is something to be said with certain types of client, and I'm perhaps talking more of within sectors where is out of the typical sectors that I work in, that they almost kind of want to see you using certain cameras or a certain quality. But I wouldn't buy it just for the sensor. If I had £10,000 or £25,000... I wouldn't necessarily go out and buy a Hasselblad or a, you know, whatever that is, you know, the latest sort of high megapixel camera just for the sake of it. Because I know that suited to my day-to-day needs, that's not required. If the question was, what would I do, as is, I'm hoping that in the next 6 to 10 months that I'm going to be looking towards replacing my second body, what would I go for? I would seriously look at the D800
mm-hmm.
and the D4,
mm-hmm.
but not because it's the D4 and it's the D800 and they're the latest cameras. That's not, as you well know, and regular listeners know, that's not my approach. The price point would fit, with the D800 would fit in better with me, but even so, I would still be looking at something like a D700 because that's about two generations back, and it would still suit my needs.
Let's turn this whole conversation on its head for a minute. Let's ignore the bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Let's ignore the sensors. Let's concentrate on the glass.
Yeah.
So, would you agree with me that it's the optical quality of the lens that you use which is going to be mainly the determining factor of image quality?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. So if you've got really first-class Canon or Nikon optics,
mm-hmm.
and I don't believe you can tell the difference anyway,
yeah.
And you've got, in Canon's terms, the L-series lenses, and I'm sure there's an...
Was it the AFS lenses or VR lenses, yeah.
Yeah. And so, and you've got the equivalent on Nikon.
Yeah.
Then really, does it matter what body you're shooting on?
It doesn't, really. I mean, you could, in theory, I know certainly with the Nikons, and it's the Canon is the same, I believe, over recent years, but Nikons, you can use any of their lenses going back 50-odd years on any of their modern bodies. And I think I'm right in saying that Canon changed their mount somewhere in the past.
Well, as soon as the AR system started, the lenses fit. Mm.
So,
and
say,
then
say
a
you
backwards
were,
compatible.
You, either of us within our systems could use a 10-year-old digital camera, which might only be... Oh, I've still got my old Nikon D2H, which is a 4-megapixel, and that's probably about six years old, something like that now. So I could get a top-of-the-line AFS lens, which is optically as sharp as I can get, and use that on a 4-megapixel camera, getting the most out of that. And if I really needed bigger file sizes, then I could use Perfect Resize to get it where I need to. Now, some people would say you shouldn't be doing any extra work to files than you need to. And so that would be unnecessary. You'd still be better off getting a high-resolution camera in the first place.
Okay, so let's go back to the first thought then. Who's going to use... Where is Perfect Resize or On1 software going to get its customer base from? Who is going to buy Perfect Resize? And what are they going to buy it for?
I can immediately see a market for fine art pictures. Obviously, if you're working in the printing industry...
But then wouldn't you go and buy for this really super megapixel sensor if you're going to working in the fine art industry?
Yeah, but let's be honest. A lot of people that are shooting fine art, as it were, a lot of people are selling prints through their own websites, what have you. They're not fine art photographers. They're taking nice pictures, and the term fine art relates not to a highly crafted picture in that true sense, but framing up a print and flogging it through your web shop for other people.
I've got an entirely novel idea. Since the cost of Perfect Resize 7 is so low, for £60, it's worthwhile having, even if you never use it, just in case at some point you actually want to use it.
Well, I mean, that example I was relating about having the pictures on the side of the van. I was working directly with the design agency at that time for that assignment, and I said to them, what is the size of the van? What does it need to be? They sent me the specification of the van and a line drawing and everything with all the dimensions ruled in, and I could then put the absolute specific to make sure that it perfectly covered those dimensions and allowed trimming or what have you. So for me, it was worth doing because that was extra work which I wouldn't have been able to have done if I hadn't had that software.
Yeah, okay.
So, and it's worth pointing out that one of the shots that was used on one side of that van was shot at 4 megapixels, and it was a crop. They cropped my picture, and it was resized, and it was still lovely and sharp through that software, the earlier version of.
Yeah. I think I can think of a number of images where I would want to just take part of the image and blow that up to a decent size, and sort of Perfect Resize is going to be a wonderful method of doing that.
Mm.
It's going to be, because of the it seemed to be an increase in quality when we were actually resizing it upwards.
Mm. I mean, it is worth saying that for those of you that are maybe new to Photoshop or picture editing, sharpening, a lot of photographers will tell you that sharpening should be the last thing that you do to an image before you save it. Now, it is worth pointing out that, Hugh, when we were looking at a selection of your images, and we just very quickly ran a couple of tests, your pictures had already been finalised and sharpened.
Yep.
And there was that definite quality that we see with almost over-sharpened pictures. Not saying that your pictures were over-sharpened in the first instance, but through the process, it was more pronounced. Because it did seem that Perfect Resize had added a certain clarity to the pictures.
Yep.
So if you knew that you were going to be upscaling some pictures, you would either you would work on that picture from the raw file, and you would do as little manipulation or anything on it. You certainly wouldn't do any sharpening until you had upscaled it and got that resized version of the picture.
Yeah. Yeah, then you do. Once you've actually got the image, and if you need to do any cloning or whatever else you want to do, then, as before, the last thing you do is you sharpen. Well, that's how I would do it, put it into my workflow.
Yeah.
But the thing that I find a really compelling argument, very few people in the UK photographic market, or the European, perhaps, European photographic market, are going to benefit from the professional edition, unless, of course, they're going to want to do CMYK printing, or they have a particular need to work in Lightroom, or Aperture.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at some of the other features that are available on all the other versions here. You've got, where are we? Like a tiling feature, so you can create tiled mosaics, which is kind of a novelty feature. I can't immediately think of how I'd use it unless I was doing a standalone.
Well, if you
display.
Don't want to go, if you don't want to go and fund the cost of a print that's 24 inches wide, then you can actually do it in 5 or 6 lumps of A4.
But I mean, we were just having a look at when we opened it up as a standalone application. You had things like on one of the panels there, the section of gallery wrap, texture control, sharpening, film grain, tiling, all those sort of things. So it's almost borrowing from what you would be doing in Photoshop or Lightroom anyway.
Absolutely.
You know, and then just looking at here, in both versions supports cropping and resizing in one step. Again, that simulated film grain for perceptual sharpening.
Yeah.
Interesting. Apply sharpening based on luminosity only. What else have we got here? Supports resizing grayscale images. So, yeah, you know, includes... that was another interesting thing. Includes document size presets for common photo and paper sizes.
Yep.
So, as we said, we said, for example, okay, on a vertical picture, we wanted, like a portrait aspect picture, we wanted the horizontal dimensions to be, say, 24 inches.
Yep.
And we just put that in, and it's based on the dimensions of that file, it told us what was going to be the vertical dimensions.
Yeah.
So as long as, you know, but then this is saying that you, if you said you wanted it to be 20 by 20, or, you know, what, well, it's not a standard size, it's 20 by 16, say, it supports that. So it's taking out extra workflow at the click of a couple of buttons.
Oh, yes, it's extraordinary. And certainly on the Mac, it appears to work absolutely intuitively.
And one other thing that it says here, batch process multiple files at once, but Photoshop is required for that. But then again, if you were batching, say you were putting together a panel of exhibition prints, and you say you needed 10, you think, right, put them into a folder, batch all of those, go and put the kettle on, and because it's not going to take too long, whereas it might have been an hour, an hour and a half, or whatever, it's very quick and simply
well,
done.
It's too, well, even on the huge prints that we actually were playing with, each upside was between a minute and 2 minutes. So it's extremely quick.
Now, I'm very impressed. I mean, I've literally only just had a look at this morning. I haven't had a chance on my machine or anything to give it any more thought than that. But yeah, just it's a nice. I thought, you know, it was nice to have this discussion just based on this. But I think it is something that for £60, people spend more than that on batteries and goodness knows what in the course of a month that they never use anyway. Yeah. So, you know, it's not an expensive piece of software.
If you ever feel that you're going to actually want to make a big print, or alternatively, you are going to want to take a section of a print and blow it up to A3 in size, then I believe that having perfect resize plugged into your computer is going to be... a piece of software that will save the day on many occasions. And since it costs so little, why not have it anyway?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And it is worth saying, just like a great many of these programs, bits of software. There is a 30-day free trial that you can get through www.onesoftware.com, and of course I'll link to that in the show notes. But any final closing thoughts?
Yeah, I think we should return to this in about 3 months' time when we've played with it.
I think so.
I mean, we've played with it gently this morning, but I think after 3 months we'll have played with it a great deal more. And at that point, we'll have a lot more to say about it.
Absolutely. So hopefully, guys, that's given you a very slight overview of this little bit of software and some of the considerations as to why you might or might not want to take a look at it, where perhaps you might have gone wrong in the past, having spent thousands of pounds on cameras believing you were going to get the size pictures you required, when actually all you needed to have done was spent £120 or £60 on a bit of software that would have got you there in the first place. But we will return to this, Hugh, in a few months' time. And it'll be interesting to see your thoughts, having actually played with it properly, with real-world scenarios, real-world pictures that, you know, you've kept that in mind. And so on that note, thank you for your time once again, and we'll catch up soon.
All right, bye-bye.
I'm really looking forward to seeing just what this latest version has to offer in my real-world activities. And, as you heard, we'll be catching up again in the future, specifically to share our thoughts with you. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget, I'm on Twitter, at Giles Babbage. There's a Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or, of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I will speak to you all very soon.
Member of the CurrentPhotographer.com podcast network. Find more great photography shows at CurrentPhotographer.com/podcast.